People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. You're listening to Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trojan welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. Do you remember Madame Zingara? After a decade cloaked in silence and stardust, the legendary Royal Countess Zingara makes her triumphant Cape Town return in October with La Dolce Royale at Century City. Reborn, reimagined, and, as they say, more enchanting than ever, the wait is finally over and bookings are now open. It opens on the 11th of October. Well, with me in the studio now is Craig Leo, who's going to direct La Dolce Royale. And Craig, people have this wonderful memory of Zingara, don't they, of just glamour, dinners, clothes, costumes, music. Yeah. It's all about glamour. Can we expect that sort of thing? Welcome, by the way. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Yes, I think you can expect that from Madame Zingara. It wouldn't be Madame Zingara without it.
No, without that, yes.
So we are definitely going to give you the night, like what you remember. Mm-hmm. But as a rebirth of the show, we've kind of also looked at, you know, it's 10, maybe 12 years later in mm-hmm. that time.
It's been a long time, yes.
We've had a pandemic. We had water shortages. Right. We're in the middle of what I would call World War III.
Absolutely.
So it's a very, it's a tricky thing to do something that's kind of hedonistic and decadent in the midst of all of this.
And it's possibly a good thing, because it is an escape.
It is
basically
an escape.
When you go into that tent mm-hmm. for the hour or two or three that you're there, it's an escape, isn't it?
It is an escape. We also are approaching it with a sense of, let's call it responsibility, but what we are going to do is we're going to make it a love letter to the world, a wish for the world. So when you arrive, you will be invited to make a wish, write it down, and place it into an oracle, which will be there. And that is how we want people to approach the evening, so that you're not just... there's some intention, some thought. Maybe you go away and you take something with you and you think about how you might action that prayer or mm-hmm. wish mm-hmm. or how you might look at the world around you or the invisible people that we ignore on the street, you know, the people that you just don't notice, non-important people. And so that there's awareness when you leave. Yes, you had a great time. You're probably going to nurse your little hangover the next day. But perhaps you will think about how you walk in the world.
Afterwards. Okay, so this little note thing you do right at the beginning, long before the actual experience.
Correct.
Yeah. I see. Zingara has been around a long time, hasn't it? The original mm-hmm. was around for a while. And I wonder what it is that attracts people, because it's always been hugely popular. So I remember being quite shocked when it closed down.
Yes. You know, I think it's a combination of all these elements that make up, give you an unusual experience. So you've got, I always say it's food for the tummy. It's food for thought and food for the soul.
Right.
So you're getting a wonderful evening, a five-course dinner. You're also getting this experience, you know, this immersive experience. And then the performance, which is circus-based, it's physical. You get to see people doing extraordinary things with their bodies. And they're right in front of you. You know, it's like you can literally reach out and touch them.
It's quite intimate, isn't it, in that respect?
So the experience of it is very vivid.
Mm-hmm. Who are the performers? Where do they come from? Are they all local actors and dancers and singers?
A mixture.
Okay.
We always try and bring in as much local talent as possible. Obviously, being some of the work being acrobatic, we have a smaller pool to draw from. We have got two local artists. One is Lunga, who's a contortionist from Joburg, and then we've got a lovely aerialist called Jenny. And what's lovely about working with them is because they're here, we can create things from scratch. So we make something new with the local artists. Mm-hmm. The internationals arrive. Their acts are already kind of, let's say, choreographed and set. And then we can tweak it, add music, add costume, and fit it into our narrative, it into our concept.
So as director or co-director, whatever, you're not the choreographer as such. You work with a choreographer.
I work with a choreographer, but my circus background allows me to also work with the acrobats. So I understand the medium. I understand what's possible, what isn't possible, where we can push the boundary a little bit. So together we work very closely.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to find out more about your circus background in a moment. But going back just to this, is it literally in a tent?
Yeah, it's a Spiegelzelt. So it's a mirror tent. They're Belgian. And when you come in, it actually doesn't feel like you're in a tent. It's like a kind of a round structure.
But does it look like a circus tent, for example?
From far, you might think so. Mm-hmm. But it's wood paneling and mirrors. And so when you're in there, it feels like you're in this beautiful old wooden building.
Right, with lots of mirrors.
Mirrors and, yeah, it's got a lovely Belgian quality to it.
That must make a lovely effect with the lighting, flashing off the mirrors, for example, at various stages of what you're doing.
Yes, I mean, the mirrors are placed on the pillars mostly, and then there's kind of... around the top, you've got a window that is stained glass. So you've got this kind of old world quality to it. But the mirrors don't necessarily get in the way of the lights. I think my lighting designer will probably beg to differ when he arrives and goes, oh, we've got mirrors in the space.
Oh, okay. And I like the way you referred a couple of times to the sort of Belgian feel.
Yes.
Which you can imagine, as you said, with that stained glass and things like that.
Yeah, that's where they come from, these tents, specific to actually one family, the Klessens.
Oh, so you have to import the entire tent.
Yes.
And where is this tent going to be set?
It's now, it's gone up, it's started already. It's at Canal Walk.
Okay.
Right next to where you've got the Long Walk to Freedom with all the sculptures.
Yes, with all the sculptures, yes.
You'll see there's a huge parking lot there, and already, like it started yesterday, it started going up. So it's very exciting.
So where do you do all the rehearsals in the meantime?
That's a good question. No, we have a rehearsal space for aerial artists, which is like a stunt academy. So they've got nice high roofs. They've got a winch so we can pull people up and down in the air. And then we have another space where the singers are singing and rehearsing. Mm-hmm. So we've got another whole side of the show that is music-based, and that is led by our musical director, Glenn Swart.
Okay.
It's another department.
Craig, whenever there's a guest here, if they're doing something exotic like you're doing, I'm wondering what music you're choosing. And the first piece I see is by Max Richter, who did that reimagining of the Four Seasons.
Correct.
I think that's what he's most known for among maybe our listeners. Mm. So what have you chosen?
This one's actually not from the Four Seasons. This is a piano short. So it's an edit. He does that a lot with music. I find he'll take something classical and then he sort of filters it through his...
As he did with the Four Seasons.
Yeah, and something new emerges. So this is Sleep. It's one of the... There's quite a few versions of this particular track. And I chose this one because I find it very moving.
Okay.
I find his music incredibly moving. I just drift off. Not to sleep, I hope.
No, let's listen.
Thank you.
a short piano piece there by Max Richter, and it was the first choice of my guest on People of Note this week, and I'm talking to Craig Leo, who is co-directing the new The Royal Countess Zingara, La Dolce Royale. And so that chap, Max Richter, you were telling me while that was playing that you actually met him. Just tell me how that came about, because I only know him through some reimagined stuff he's done famously with Vivaldi's Four mm-hmm. Seasons.
So what happened was we were very fortunate to be commissioned by the Globe Theatre, actually, to take this piece of music and then imagine what the visuals would be. Mm-hmm. And it was all at the time I just finished War Horse, and we did it. We told a story. We workshopped it with a company, and we created this narrative based on the Four Seasons. And it was all done with puppets. And it was in the Globe, which, if anyone doesn't know, that theatre is lit by candles, candelabras. So it's a very magical space.
I'm sure.
It really is extraordinary.
And it's a real copy, I'm told, of Shakespeare's Globe.
Yes, correct. So you start the evening and you light the candles, the candelabras go up, and then your show begins, and you do all of that. Mm-hmm. And because it was based on his work, of course, we had to get his permission, and he then came to say hello to us at the theatre.
And what sort of person is he, Max Richter?
He's very, I find him quite intimidating, because he's obviously very, very, very bright. He's a very sharp man. I'm always a little starstruck generally when I meet people like that. And I was obviously by that stage quite a fan. Mm-hmm. You know, we've been working with the music for so long. It was part of your daily bread, so
yes,
to speak.
Yes.
So to meet him, I found it quite daunting.
Well, but as you say, he's done, I mean, he's very bit of a celebrity, let's
yep.
face it,
yep.
with that Four Seasons.
Yep.
With shows, you mentioned War Horse there. And I think that's when I met you the first time.
It's possible.
When you were here doing War Horse in Cape Town. Is that possible?
That's very possible.
Because I remember having you as a guest before. But here with this new venture that you're on, it's different, isn't it, from other things you've done? Because you've done a whole host of things. Just mention some of them.
Correct. My career is quite
It's been quite varied.
Yes. So I've moved from, you know, when I started working in theatre, I worked at KPAB in the old days, and I was actually an ASM. So I used to do props and...
That's assistant stage manager.
Correct, sorry,
yes.
For the musical theatre, for the drama company. And from there, I slowly started to do follow spotting, and then at one point I was working with Keith Anderson, and he had a box of puppets, opened it up and said, "Do you want to refurbish these?" And I went, "Yes." I say yes a lot. And then
had you worked with puppets before?
No, never.
Oh, I wonder what it is that attracts you to them.
Well, I think it was absolute fluke. Once I'd started working with them, I fell in love with them. Mm-hmm. And then we had a lady called Nina Gerasimov who came over here from Europe, and she picked up a mask one day, and when she brought it to life, I was astounded, because it was the first time I'd really seen puppetry at work and what it can do. And then I was hooked. And then from there, then I went and played at Zip Zap for a while. I think I was the first adult character to be in a show of theirs, because they normally stick to kids.
Yes.
And from there, my circus career took off. So I then got really involved with circus for a while. Went off to Sun City.
What attracted you to the circus?
I think there's several things. One of the things is obviously it's a magical space, particularly with the advent of the Cirque du Soleil style of performance.
Yes.
You know, circus changed completely, and it was around that time, and I found it fascinating. There's that aspect of it. And then also I was never very physical at school. I didn't like competitive sport, but I love being physical. And I found circus tick that box for me. You know, I could get fit. I could do things with my body in the air. It was incredible.
So did you become one of the trapeze artists?
Eventually. I started very late.
Okay.
I was after 25.
Oh, that is late, yes, to do that sort of thing.
Yeah. And then I was invited somebody saw that character at Zip Zap, and they invited me to be the lead character in the Sun City show, Balazzazzi. And once I said yes to that, I had to train for 9 months, 7 days a week, and learn five disciplines. So it was a very intensive sort of training period, but got me on this kind of circus journey. We formed a company once we were there because we were bored in the day. There's nothing to do in Sun City. And that company then toured to Germany for 2.5 years. And then I did a solo act for another 8 years after that. So,
my goodness.
Yeah.
It's been quite a life.
And, in between that, doing design, theater design, costume design, and puppetry. So this, all these things have always been kind of running in parallel.
I want to ask you shortly after our next piece of music about puppets, and especially to do with the wild animals and the extraordinary journey you took.
Yes.
But before I ask you that, let's take another music break. And I see you've got to pronounce some Turkish language.
Yes.
So I'm going to leave that to you.
Thank you. This is called, I'm going to just say it as it is read.
Yeah, as it's read, as it's spelled.
Correct. It's Biz Ne Zaman and then Dusman. And then the final word is Olduk. That's the artist.
Okay. Olduk is the artist.
Correct. And then Gaya Su Akol is the name of the track.
And this is all the way from Turkey.
Correct.
Let's have a listen.
Thank you.
music all the way from Turkey. Gayasu Akol was the performer there. Something called Biznesman, but I won't try and pretend I can speak Turkish. It was another choice of my guest. I'm talking to Craig Leo, who's in town to direct La Dolce Royal at the Royal Countess Zingara, which is opening again after so many years in darkness. But we were talking about puppets. And just to get back to Turkey, there was a puppet connection there as well, wasn't there?
Yes, correct. About 4 years ago, I was asked to come and join. It's a Handspring collaboration, and they were commissioned to build a 3-meter-high puppet based on a little refugee girl, and a Syrian refugee child that was discovered in the refugee camp in France. Mm-hmm. So the puppet was based on her, and then the project was that the puppet would then walk from the border of Syria all the way across Europe, doing the journey that a lot of refugees have to take. Mm. And she would finish her journey and find her home in Manchester.
Wow. Yeah. And is that what that's what it turned out to be?
That's what it turned out to be, yes. So we had a small company of 9 people, puppeteers, mm-hmm. who would rotate because she's big and she's heavy and she takes a lot of strain. And we did quite a lot of the journey, actually was quite detailed in Turkey. We went to some incredible places like Ephesus and Assisi, and we rehearsed in Turkey as well. So mm-hmm. I got to hear a lot of music, and I fell in love with the language, and I really loved the people. I found it wonderful.
I have to say, as I said, I've only been to Istanbul, which yeah. really is it feels like being on another planet.
Yeah, it's like a gateway, I suppose.
It is. Yeah. Well, it was yeah. so for many centuries, yeah. wasn't it, from the Constantinople days. Yeah. But the puppet thing intrigues me, and you told me the story about animals doing a long trek.
Yes.
So do share that story, because I found it quite fascinating.
So the company that did Amal, called The Walk Productions, mm-hmm. Are directors Palestinian, and he is very interested in this idea of migration of people and of animals. So our second project, which was called The Herds, was really about highlighting the plight of animals and in relation to climate change and how, you know, climate change is affecting their environment. So as an act of activism, we were commissioned to make life-size animals in South Africa here with a company called Ukwanda. The animals had to be made out of recycled material and materials that would be able to be recycled. So no plastic, no nothing like that. And that was a huge challenge. And then we spent a year and a half designing and building. And then the journey started. And it started in Kinshasa, in the middle of Africa. And what we would do is we'd arrive in a place. We would then take a small group of volunteers. For 3 days, we teach them puppetry. We give them a crash course. Then we give them the puppets. And then we head into the streets. And we have 3 or 4 performances in every city. So we started in Kinshasa. Then we moved across to Lagos. And from Lagos to Dakar. Then we went up to Casablanca, Morocco, Casablanca. Then hopped over to Spain. And so we kept on this journey. It was, again, over 3 months, ending up in Nordkap, which is the very, very top of Norway.
My goodness, so that's quite a route.
It is a route.
Were you following a route that someone took once before, or was it a route that you decided best suited what you were doing?
Well, the idea is that the animals that are in Central Africa migrate north in search of water, land, food, and on the route, they then encounter other animals who join them from different countries. So a wolf would join in Spain, for example. The deer begin to join in Europe and Norway. And so this herd actually grows as it travels. The route itself is based a lot on partnerships that you strike or that you set up prior. So not every city wanted to play with us. So we went on the route where cities wanted to play and where funding was available, obviously, and where the interest lay most.
How many animals did you make? Puppets?
Well, we partnered. We did one prototype of, we did a line. There was about 9 animals, including an elephant and a giraffe. And then what we did, part of the challenge of this build was that we had to create how to build documents, which is not normal for a puppet maker to have to then disseminate the instruction manual of how to build this animal.
Exactly.
And that was sent off to various partners, and they built as well. So there was a lovely collaboration across the globe.
My goodness, so you would arrive in a city that you had contacted and they built you a puppet or two.
Yeah, or more than a puppet or two, yeah. Some people had to build 30, 40. So the herd grew. I mean, at one point I had 142 puppeteers in a room rehearsing.
And were the public, was this, did you walk through the streets or how did it work? How did you move?
So some of the performances was exactly that. You start at point A, move through a city. Totally surprising people on the streets, people in coffee shops going, what the hell's just happened? An elephant walked past me along with all the other animals. And that at other times we collaborated, which was great. We had the opportunity to maybe have one or two rehearsals with a dance company, for example, or an artist, a visual artist. So there's always this call out to the community and to artists in the community to respond. And they make proposals and then we get together and we have a couple of days and we play and then we present that on the streets.
And you went right up to the top of Norway, as you said, Nordkarp, which is the tip.
Top tip, the very top tip, near
the Arctic.
Yeah.
And then what happened?
Well, that was the end of our journey. So the final image that you see of these animals is them sort of staring out into an abyss, really. It's like, where do we go from here? There is nowhere else to go. Mm-hmm. So there's a big sort of question mark at the end of it, like what happens next? What happens to these creatures? It's interesting also because they're made of cardboard, the journey took its toll on them. You know, they got thinner, they got weaker, their skin started to break and tear.
Oh.
And initially I was very worried that, you know, spend our whole lives fixing puppets, which had to happen anyway. But the actual wear and tear on the animals, on the bodies of the puppets, started to really work visually and tell the story of arduous journey and suffering.
And also the threat of climate change
and
the damage it's doing.
Yeah.
So you are indeed an activist.
I believe so. I found out, vicariously through my life.
Okay. Well, let's take another piece of music, Craig. And this time you've got Brian Eno. What is this, Spinning Away?
Spinning Away. So Brian Eno is also another very, very clever man musically. I mean, anyone who may know him, he's done soundtracks. He's done it all, this man. He's also an activist. And he worked with John Cale on this song called Spinning Away. And when I heard it the first time, I fell in love with the lyrics. I love what it's saying. It's got a beautiful melody. And I just want to sing along when I hear it.
Well, you're allowed to do sing-alongs, Peter. Okay, let's listen.
The car.
a piece called Spinning Away, featuring there Brian Eno and John Cale. And again, a choice of my guest on People of Note this week, who's Craig Leo, here to direct La Dolce Royale at the Royal Countess Zingara. I was just thinking, listening to this music and the story he's been telling, who wrote the music, or are they using famous pieces of music and doing covers of them?
Yes. So what we do is we kind of curate the evening. Sometimes I think of it as a big canvas or a collage.
Oh, yes. That's an interesting way
so
of looking at it.
So you're placing or putting and layering all of these different elements together to create meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And we're able to source the music for the acts. Some of the acts arrive with very, very cleverly edited pieces of music that we can't mess with because it's very, very carefully edited.
Yes.
And then we also make a track selection for our live singers. We have actually got five of them and an opera singer, so we've got quite a lot of voice.
Oh, right, okay. And they sing along with what's then a click track, so to speak.
Yes, sometimes they sing to the act itself, some of the aerial acts, for example, and then we actually have dinner sets, so we have a set where it's just song. And the first one is a little bit more nostalgic in terms of the genre of music that they mm-hmm. sing, a little bit more jazzy. And then the second time they come on, also in a dinner break, it's slightly more contemporary, but not sort of modern music. It's just a slightly more,
right.
You'll know the music, you know, it's something you
yes,
can all sing
yes.
along to.
Yes.
But,
so most of the music is then recorded and specially edited to fit in. There's no live band there or anything?
Not this time around. We have had in the past, but this time we've gone with an extra vocalist.
Extra vocalist, yeah. I see. So when you said a dinner break, does that mean when people are having their course?
Correct.
The entertainment stops.
Yeah, we stop and the singers take over and liven up the space with music.
Okay, while music. People are eating. Mm. It really is sounds quite exotic is the word I want to use.
Yeah, I mean, it's very lavish and, you know, and you really are in it when you're there. You know, mm-hmm. you surround, because it's a circular space as
yes,
well.
Yes, and with mirrors. As
correct, and you can look across the space and you see your fellow audience members looking back at you.
Oh, yes.
So there's a very lovely kind of sense of togetherness.
Yes, and as they say here, a fusion of immersive theater and emotional alchemy.
That's
a nice way of doing it. Nice way of putting it. You know what? I just want to find out a bit more about you, Craig. Mm-hmm. This whole thing of puppets which attracted to you, the way you got into theatre. But where does that all come from? You were born, you said, here in Cape Town. You're a Cape Townian.
Yes, I was born here and I went to school in Bellville. And then to escape the army, you know, you could either study or leave the country.
Yes, I remember.
And I opted to study. I wanted to be a fine artist. That was my first choice. And my parents were like, no way. Because you never earn any money being a fine artist.
Okay.
So go and do fine art and architecture. So I was like, fine, I'll do that. I'm not going to the army. And I was terrible at it. I was a really bad architectural student. It was quite hard to study in those days because you were always protesting. There was
yes.
always a march.
Yes.
There was always something going on and tear gas happening in the, you know, I remember once they tear gassed the architectural department through tear gas through the window. So it was always disruptive.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an excuse as to why I was terrible at it, but eventually I left university and that teaching got me a job here working for a set designer because I could draft.
Yes, because yeah, you could draft.
I could
yes.
draft. So that took me to theater.
At this point, there was nothing in your life pointing to what you're doing now.
No. Puppets were never, I was never, I think my mom bought me a little puppet, like a little marionette when I was younger, but I never ever thought this would be the work that I do, not once ever, not even an inkling of it.
And look at you now.
I know.
As crazy. They say. So puppets, is that going to continue as a big thing in your life, apart from Madame Zingara?
I
which has nothing to do with puppets, is it?
No. I tried to bring a puppet into it and we realized, no, we're going to force something in there that isn't necessarily, doesn't have a place in Zingara at the moment. But, you know, puppetry is my great love.
Mm-hmm. And hence your involvement as well with Warhorse.
Correct, yeah. So I was very fortunate to collaborate and work extensively with the Handspring Puppet Company.
Mm-hmm.
We started on a production called Tall Horse, which was about a giraffe that King Louis ordered brought to him from Africa. So this journey of the giraffe through Africa to Paris is the story of Tall Horse. After that, they were commissioned to do War Horse by the National Theatre, and I was cast as the head puppeteer for the head character, the lead character, which is Joey, the horse.
But you weren't on stage in the puppet, or were
I
you?
I was initially.
Oh, you were in the puppet. Mm,
I did the first two runs at the National Theatre, and then from there it moved to the West End. I wasn't really that keen to go to the West End, but I moved from being the performer to being an associate puppetry director. So from then on, I started to direct their touring productions of the production. So I did Holland, I did Australia.
And you preferred that to actually being in the puppet on stage?
No.
I was going to say.
I still love being
Bring the puppet alive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a very grueling role. You're standing on stage for 2.5 hours with your arm in the air, it's a very heavy puppet. High focus, you know, you don't leave the stage. If you do, I think it's maybe for 5 or 10, 5 minutes here and there. So after 9 months, my body was exhausted.
Yeah. And because the puppet itself is heavy.
Yes, and you're doing two matinees a week and six shows on 6 days. Mm-hmm. So that's 8 shows a week for 9 months. I was exhausted. In fact, when they moved it to the West End, they started to work with teams that rotated so that it was more sustainable.
But nonetheless, it was hugely successful. I remember when it was here in Cape Town, it took the imagination of the public and really did well, didn't it?
Yeah. That was one of the touring shows that I was fortunate enough to direct. Okay. And very excited that it actually came to South Africa because these things
were
very
home.
Yeah, exactly. It was wonderful to receive it here.
Let's take another piece of music, Craig. And I see you've chosen something called Me in 20 Years, Moses Sumney. Mm. What is this?
So Moses Sumney, I discovered maybe about a year ago. Suddenly the song came on and I was like transfixed by this man's voice. He has a range that is so vast that like I wasn't sure what I was hearing, whether it was a voice or an instrument. And this particular, it's not about me in 20 years, it's just titled Me in 20 Years. But when you hear it, you'll understand immediately what I mean about the extraordinary capability of this man's singing voice. And yeah, it's transformative.
Hey, after all these years, I'm still here, fingers outstretched with your
to be braced in endless January. Have I become the cavity I feared? Ask me in 20 years.
Well, that was called Me in 20 Years, Moses Sumney. And as Craig, my guest, said, I hope you were struck by his voice, apart from anything else. Yeah. Craig Liu is my guest. He's here to direct the La Dolce Royal at Madame Zingara, the Royal Countess Zingara. Come back to that in a moment. But just when this is all over now, Craig, what's next on your itinerary? Because it does sound as though you've been rather busy. This whole herd thing has just ended, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. Well, it's ended for now. The tour will probably pick up, as interest has been quite quite good around the world.
You mean to do it again?
Yeah, in different countries.
Oh, in different countries.
Like South, there's a climate conference now in Rio de Janeiro in November, to which we'll be going. Mm-hmm. A short trip. But I'm beginning to explore another piece with a wonderful director called Neil Coppen, called Isita Sabantu. And we're going to workshops. In fact, I go to Joburg tomorrow. Tomorrow I go to Joburg and we start to play and explore what this the subject matter and the writing and the research that's been done. And that play will be on at the Market Theatre next year in March.
But the other thing I found quite interesting, this show, La Dolce Royale, is got a long run here in Cape Town, hasn't it?
Yes. I think it's running till the end of May.
Wow, that is a long run. Mm. Then you go to Johannesburg with it.
Yeah, they'll go to Johannesburg. We may, depending on what changes happen, if people stay, like some of the contracted acrobats might move on. Mm-hmm. We may have to come in and work with the new people. But at the moment, theoretically, once the show's open, we'll pop in and give notes, but that's it.
Then you leave it to
they
run.
Kick us out, yeah.
And when I was talking to you just now about you being on stage in the war horse costume, mm-hmm. have you ever done, shall we call it, normal acting on stage?
I don't know about normal. I did play Venticelli in Amadeus at the Baxter Theatre, directed by Laura Foote. But again, that was also very heightened. It's quite physical. The kind of style of the performance was very heightened. Mm-hmm. So it's either been physical theatre with Magnet Theatre or a slightly heightened style. But I've never done kind of straight. Let's call it straight.
Straight theatre, yes. It's not that, rather than normal.
No. I played a vicar in a high school play. I think that was about as
as normal as you got.
Imagine.
I wonder what attracted you all those years ago to physical theatre.
You know, it feels like my whole life was just one accident after the other, a fortunate accident, series of events. I was very fortunate to be asked to design a show for Magnet Theatre. The first one ever was Medea. And once I'd met Mark and Jenny from Magnet, our relationship grew. And I used to go to their workshops that they'd run and that kind of thing. And eventually they asked me to be in a show, which was a physical theatre piece. And mm-hmm. immediately, it just felt right to me. It felt right to my body, to the style of performance for me was easier to access than straight acting because I'm not a trained actor.
Right,
so I wouldn't even know where to begin. But my body, I understand.
Okay.
And I know how to tell the story with my body. So that's how what attracted me and how I got into performance, actually.
Okay. And now here you are at Madame Zingara.
Yes.
We're going to have to end now, Craig. Craig Liu has been my guest. And just to remind you that the Royal Countess Zingara, with a show called La Dolce Royal, opens on the 11th of October. And the tent is in Cape Colony.
Canal Walk.
Canal Walk. Yeah, is that Canal
correct.
Walk?
Yeah.
So, Craig, I see you've chosen Ella Fitzgerald as your last piece.
Yes. I think it's an ode to my parents in a way because I grew up with Ella Fitzgerald and Frank Sinatra and all of those wonderful crooners and singers, jazz singers. Obviously, it was all records.
Yes.
And I used to love that, you know. Mm-hmm. I think it kind of set up my taste for music in a way. Not a bad way to start, I think.
No. Okay, so we'll end on that. Craig Liu, thanks very much for sharing your thoughts with us.
Thank you for having me.
They're writing songs.
but not for me. A lucky star's above, but not for me. With love to lead the way, I've found more clouds of gray than any Russian play could guarantee. I was a fool to fall and get that way.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.